Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
This episode is brought to you by Paramount Plus. Get in, loser! Mean Girls is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Join Katie Heron as she meets the plastics and Tina Fey's new twist on the modern classic. Get ready for more of the rumors, backstabbing, and jokes you loved from the original movie with some fetch surprises. Rated PG-13. Wear pink and head to ParamountPlus.com to try it free.
What's going on, everybody? Hope you are having a wonderful week so far. And today, it's podcast time. Bristol-based brothers, Tom and Ian Griffiths, aka Icarus. I love what these guys have put out over the years, and they're just great guys as well. This is the first time actually full-on having a conversation with them. We've been on lineups over the years together, seen each other in green rooms back and forth, but this is the first time properly having a solid conversation. They have gone from being signed to FFRR for 5 years, 5.5 years, and now they're going independent, which is really exciting to me. And they got a few announcements on the podcast to talk about, which I will wait for you rather than giving it all to you now. So without further ado, Icarus. Yes, lads, what's going on?
Hello, mate. How are you?
How you doing?
Yeah, good. I'm just going to turn you up a little bit. So the people can hear you. There we
go. What are you guys running through?
You're running through. It's called a Rodecaster.
The Rodecaster. Nice. I like that.
I know. It's good, isn't it? It's actually saved my ass so many times. Like when I first started the podcast, it was during COVID, like right at the beginning. And like podcasts was obviously a popular thing then. But it wasn't like that popular to like just do it from home. It was always like you have a studio and you do shit like that. So I was recording it like on my phone at one point, and I was like, what the hell are we doing? So when that came out, I was like, this is game changer. It's the best. It's the best.
Leveled up.
Yeah, something like that. I don't know. I think you're the 158th episode, so I hope we have.
Wow. You've been busy.
It's been busy, man. Yeah, it's been busy. Talking about busy, what about you guys? How's life? How's Bristol?
It's good.
Hey, man, it's lovely today. Yeah,
sun's shining.
Always.
Yeah, we've got a nice position here. So we're out in Brislington.
Oh, nice.
And we've moved, like, our studio's been around, really, in Bristol, but this one we've been in for 5 years, and we've actually got windows. And we've got a nice, like, meadow outside, and, yes, it's pretty good today.
It's an absolute game-changer when you, like, you start writing records and you're like, I want to be in a dark room. And then you get older and realize that you want to see sunlight. And
yeah, realize that sun and air are quite important.
We've done our fair stint of years underground.
Literally.
Yeah, it was in hindsight, not the healthiest of workplace underneath, like, under like a townhouse with no natural light, no fresh air, You had to like go outside to use the toilet. Like it was, like we just got used to it. Yeah. That's all we knew. But yeah, looking around to like move studio and yeah, coming into a place with windows was a revelation. But.
It's absolute game. My studio in Detroit, I blocked all the windows for like sound stuff.
Yeah.
And I regret it so much because I'm just like, I wish I could just look outside.
Yeah. I mean, it's not ideal for acoustics, is it? But yeah. You've got to weigh up the options of acoustics or. Yeah.
Well, it's always, we're making club records. Like the acoustics in a club are terrible anyway, right? So it's like, it doesn't really matter. As long as it sounds all right on a big system, you just put a big kick in a bass in and you're fucking laughing really at the end of the day. It's not rocket science. It's not like we're making like, I don't know, crazy film music that has to sound amazing. But
yeah,
just making music for people to get wrecked to at the end of the day.
It's important though. It's important stuff, mate.
I agree. What, people getting wrecked to it? Or or the Sonics?
The first bit.
Have you guys always been from down here?
So we've been here 14, 15 years. We're originally from a place called Herefordshire.
Yeah.
Which is about an hour and a half north of Bristol. Parents are from here, yeah. Grandparents are from here. So like spent a lot of time. Cousins are still, you know, around and all that. Western Supermare, all of that. So yeah, spent a lot of time in Bristol.
You dodged the accent really well.
Yeah. Yeah, I think because we've moved about in our adult lives. We've moved about a bit.
Yeah.
Like both of us left. Like Herefordshire is like proper, like UR, like well farmer. But
someone's got to sample that.
But both of us at 18 were like, we're gone. See you later. Like we need to go and like, I don't know, see what city life is like. So both went to Guildford, experienced that for like 2-3 years each, and then moved to Brighton and then ended up, you know, back up here, back up in Bristol, but well back down here actually. But
it's a good part of the world there, right?
Yeah, love it. It's good. Absolutely love it.
It's got some crazy, crazy musical history as well. Over the
which is
mad.
Heritage.
What do you think is the new history of Bristol? Because there hasn't been anything mind blowing.
This is it.
It's a good question. I think like drum and bass is still massive here, isn't it?
Yeah,
like, it's kind of the biggest. Mm. Like underground electronic scene, I'd say probably is the D&B scene. Mm. Got guys like Mynu Leng and Hodge and people like that who have got like a new take on the kind of that influence, but obviously not all strictly drum and bass. But yeah, there's always little pockets of different stuff, isn't there, in Bristol?
Mm. It's like the kind of bass heavy stuff like just seems to take hold.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's like people try different stuff here. Yeah. Like Ian says, there's these little pockets of stuff which have got their own little scenes. I mean, you start looking into it, you're like, oh, actually, no, there's more people here doing like R&B or techno than I realised. But it doesn't kind of have these huge scenes like bass, bass and drum and bass is
still massive. Yeah, I was talking to Travis Derrick that used to work at Motion.
Right,
moved to ministry. He was saying like they could literally put a drum and bass night on every single night in Motion and sell out. They were like, it's ridiculous. Yeah. Like how well the drum and bass nights do compared to everything else. Why is that? I don't know why that is.
No, I don't know.
There's no reason why that is the case. Because all the kids are students, right?
Yeah.
It's not like a bunch of Bristolians going there. Like, it's just a bunch of students, mostly.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, maybe it's just become kind of synonymous with this city as well. Like, I was coming to raves here when I was 18. Like, going to run at Native and then, you know, when that outgrew
Native.
That place.
Fucking hell. That was a good club.
Turn our age around.
Native in Timbuktu.
I mean, so I don't know, like I would literally travel and that was when I was down in Guildford. Yeah. I would come back, you know, back up to Bristol to go to drum and bass raves over London, even though London had, you know, stuff like, you know, Bar Rumba going on, V Recordings and whatever. But
yeah, but Bristol's always the place. Bristol's better than London, let's be honest.
Yeah. So there we are. Yeah. Maybe that's why it's stuck, because it's like the best at doing that.
Yeah, I guess so. But it's a shame that there's not the smaller clubs in Bristol anymore, though. It's like, yeah, I feel like it's kind of lost a bit of the, like, the special scene that it used to have. Because it used to be, yeah, like, there always was something fucking amazing going on.
Don't you feel like we're just reaching an age now, though? We're becoming those people. That's, it's not as good as it used to be.
Yeah, maybe. The thing is I just think there's a lack of small clubs generally, because it's just so hard to make money out of clubs now,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like, DJs' fees are more expensive, which means that you have to charge more on the door. People aren't going to pay a fuck ton of money to go to a small club for a weird experience that people aren't really used to. Go to a festival and you can, for like three times what a ticket price is, you can see everybody.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's right, and especially, you know, with the economy and stuff at the moment, I think, yeah, that's probably more true than ever, that people are going to be favouring festival tickets, aren't they, over a midweek random little club night.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's a shame. But I think also the scene's changed, isn't it, where it's more so DJ-led rather than promoter-led, because it used to just be like, I remember in Bristol, like, you'd go to Native because on like a Wednesday or one, because you know that it's Native on a Wednesday. Same with Timbuktu, like, you would go there on a certain party because you know it's a party, it's not got anything really to do with the headliners, and it would cost like £5 to get in, £10 to get in, and you're absolutely, if it's £10 you're pushing it, but you're laughing, if you know what I mean. Where now it's not like that at all, I don't think.
No, it's much more about who's headlining, isn't it?
When did that switch? When did you guys notice the switch for that?
I don't know. It's
been progressively going that way, it feels like, sort of the last 10 years or so.
Yeah.
Certainly when we were like late teens, early 20s, it was very much about the night, the brand,
and the club.
And the club, save for like Elro nowadays and a handful of others, it's like, yeah, it's very much based on who's playing. I guess it's with like social media and people following DJs and just having that like personal following of what somebody's up to and where they're playing, maybe that's played a part in
being,
it, but
being able to message somebody, because I guess the brand was never that personal, was it? It was a brand. Yeah. Whereas, like, if a brand has social media, you don't really get to know about the people behind the brand. It's purely about the design and everything like that. Whereas now DJs are posting, well, I post what I have for breakfast every morning. So it's like, you know everything about them, don't you? It's just, it's way more personalized, which I guess what people want.
Yeah. But it's a shame because, like, that, you know, that experience of the small club vibe is, you know, it's all, like you say, it's almost lost now. And like, if I was just turning 18 now, like, not getting to experience that is a real shame, I think. Like, don't get me wrong, like, clubs like Motion, what is 2,000-3,000 if it's fully open, is amazing. But I mean, to be fair, that's got its little pockets anyway, so you kind of get to experience it still in a club like that. But I just think, you know, if you don't get to have the little sweaty 200 cap room experience, that's a real shame, like, as a raver.
Well, I also think, as an artist, it's not everyone can headline Motion.
Right?
And I know we're just talking Bristol, but like, not everyone can headline the big show, which means that you're then support act, which then a lot of the time no one sees you play anyway, because no one turns up until pretty much right before the headliner comes on, to a certain extent.
Yeah.
Which means that you don't really get, no one's really coming to see you. And I don't mean that in a disrespectful way to anybody that's not headlining. I'm not headlining all the time, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But it's like, you kind of miss that whole vibe of people finding you.
Yeah, it's true. It's like you and the set you would play in a 2,000 cap venue is going to be pretty different to
so different.
150 cap room. you know, if you're headlining. Like, it's not really a comparable situation, is it?
I think everyone's headlining, right? If you're, let's just use Motion for example, because it's easy. But if you're whoever's playing, no one's doing a warm up. Everyone's headlining at the end. They're treating their set like it's just like a festival, right? Because the lineup is almost like a mini festival. There's got to be a way to bring it back.
Yeah, I feel like, and I've heard people talk about this, like the kind of losing the essence of the whole club night and the warm up through to the headliner. It is, isn't it? Because you've got an hour, you've got to prove like why you're there,
why you're the best,
your records as possible. And it doesn't necessarily you don't have the whole night in mind. Whereas go back 10, 15 years, it probably would have been quite different.
Yeah. I guess also it could be really interesting to work with promoters on a smaller base where it's like, okay, financially not everyone's going to win, but if you do like a door split of like 50-50 and everyone, like, as long as no one's out of pocket, but like if you sell tickets, you sell, we do make money. If we don't sell tickets, we don't make money. And I think that's could be a cool risk for artists to kind of take with promoters on like smaller venues, and it could create something really interesting.
Yeah.
Because I think there's a divide between promoters and artists where it's like the promoters expect the artists to sell the tickets nowadays and vice versa, and no one's really doing anything. It's just kind of like just hoping, unless you're a massive headliner and you just sell out everywhere you go.
Yeah, it's tough, isn't it? I think as well with stuff like that, like if that kind of idea came back and that, you know, say it's not in a huge venue, you'd get, as an artist, like, and I'm sure we've all played these places, they get a vibe and you become excited to play somewhere like that as an artist, rather than like, okay, it's great to play to thousands of people, but like, not that we've done this, but you know, if people are doing that week in, week out, say, it becomes, I can imagine, you know, if you're doing it every weekend to thousands and thousands of people, you probably crave like, I want to play to 400 in a room. And I know that this place has got that vibe, and so I want to play there. So I'm not fussed about the fee.
Yeah.
Like, I want to play for the vibe.
Yeah.
We need to bring it back. Maybe artist-owned clubs is the answer.
Should we just buy a club in Bristol?
Yeah. Just like,
I nearly opened one. I nearly opened one years ago. Can you remember the theatre that the Motion guys opened at one point? In Black Market. It's like a student club now.
No.
It's the old Bank. It used to be called Bank years ago.
Oh, yeah. I remember that place. Yeah.
I nearly opened that like fucking years ago. And then I'm glad I didn't, because I'd be poor right now. But yeah, it's...
I do remember that.
It's a cool, insane building. Like, unbelievable. Yeah. But yeah, it didn't happen. But I think it's some student by now. There's some amazing like buildings in Bristol that would just be dope.
But I was about to say as well, actually, like, at least we still got Thekla.
Yeah, I've actually never been to Thekla.
Oh,
which is, I feel bad saying that I'm from around this area and never been, but I've heard great things.
It's just kind of never changed.
Yeah.
Like, it's, and that is what, about 350, isn't it? At the room. Yeah. That's always been the same. Even after it had a refurb.
You wouldn't know.
Well, at least there wasn't like water dripping down the artist like room at the back. And they fixed the toilet. Maybe that was it.
That was the refurb. I still am amazed Dojo is still going.
Yeah.
Dojos, yeah.
It's an interesting
place. That was like Timbuktu and like, you know, those end of the night vibes is the health and safety, and those, like, doesn't even bear thinking about, does it? Like, you just couldn't get away with that these days. But
there's a place in Detroit where I also live, called City Club. It's called Leyland. It's an old hotel from like back in the 60s. Beautiful building, but it's absolutely fucked. People still, I think people live in there. But on the bottom floor, it's a club. Quite big. I think it's like 700 cap. And they've got this two rooms as well. But they had to put netting on the ceiling because the roof kept on falling. Like parts of the roof kept on falling down. And you're just like, it's the grimiest place ever. But it's just this vibe that you're just like, yeah, there's something cool about this.
Yeah.
And yeah, you wouldn't get away with that in England at all. It would be closed down within a heartbeat. But there's something about it. It gives a good story, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Nearly died.
A danger to your rave experience. You might get knocked out by
by some lintel.
Horrifying.
Yeah. I don't know. I think we can bring it back, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know though. You just need the kids. Kids need to, you need some cool kids to start something cool. Because that's where it always came from, right? It's just some cool side. I guess it's like what the lo-fi house crew did in London, right?
Mm.
With like Mile Grab and all those guys. They just started a really interesting scene and it grew into something very organic.
I guess kind of like the Alfresco disco guys still do here. Yeah. But obviously it's just periodically one-offs.
And it's just full of a bunch of older people now because they're just, it's all of us growing up going there. And now it's like everyone's got kids, married. It's different kind of demographic now, but
yeah.
I love it. I do kind of miss those times in Bristol. Mm. They were like special times when Just Jack came through as well.
Yeah.
With their parties.
Yeah.
It was definitely a good time. But music, are you guys writing another album?
Yeah, we actually are.
We don't sound too excited about it. Fucking hell.
We thought we'd wait until this conversation to say yes. We're in it. We're pretty deep in it now. Really? Actually. Yeah, we kind of so the last album, right?
Yeah.
Quote unquote album. When we wrote it and put it out, we didn't consider it an album.
Mm.
It's one of those things. It's nine tracks, isn't it?
What would have made it an album to you?
I think just Spotify called it one. And then everyone else did, so we were like, oh, okay, maybe it's an album.
Yeah.
But yeah, we weren't in the head. We weren't like, we didn't start it with like, right, we're going to write an album.
No.
Yeah.
So we were like, well, it's not an album because, it's not.
It wasn't called it one.
Preconceived as... Mm. That's what we wanted to do, maybe that was a good thing. It's just kind of, I think actually we were only supposed to write like a six track LP, I guess that'd be called, but we just ended up with a few more tunes and just thought, oh no, this kind of all like weaves together quite nicely. So let's just chuck out nine. Like I say, Spotify called it an album, people called it an album. And at first we were a bit like, we kept saying like, no, that's not, because that would have been our first album. So we kind of like, well, we didn't see it as that. So, let's.
Well, it's not then. Fuck it, it's not an album.
No, but now I'm totally on board with it. Now, like, once it started to sink in and people were calling it, and then you even listen to it, as an artist. I don't know if you do this, but once something's out there.
Mm.
I hear it with different ears.
Yeah. It's not yours.
It's something that you've written.
Yeah.
Like in a new way.
Yeah.
And actually, I mean, sometimes you don't, do you? You go, I don't want to hear that ever again. Or like, I'm not going to listen to that for a long time because it took too long to finish.
Yeah.
But going back and listening back over, that project, sounded, we were just like, okay, cool. No, it is like, it's cohesive. That's unfolded as an album. And it kind of became one for us. But we kind of, we, after that stepped back a little bit. Just because it was quite a big project, we kind of wanted to let it.
What did that come out on? What label did that come out on?
So that was the final part of our, FFRR.
Okay. Yeah.
Deal, which we were in for like 5.5 years.
That's long.
It was long. Yeah.
How was that? Before we get into the
It was great.
The actual album.
Yeah, yeah. It was really good. It was really good. Like our major label experience is a positive one. Like you hear quite a lot of different stories, I guess, about people's major label experiences, and quite a lot of stuff, you know, comes out in press about
people's experiences. Horror stories.
Yeah, horror stories. Yeah. We were very fortunate. We had like a great team that kind of just trusted us and didn't put loads of pressure on, which allowed us to just kind of do what we felt and what we wanted. Like, we never got strong-armed into decisions. Mm. We never got, you know, forced to put out stuff we didn't want to put out. Mm. And because that pressure wasn't put on, it allowed us to just all like work together and just not do silly things with budgets and all that. It was just allowed us to keep going and like keep putting out music.
It was just a great label, right? Just allowed you to be artists that all you want of a label, right?
Yeah. It's like support, basically. Yeah. And obviously, like, you value opinion, and we sit there and go through stuff and have like constructive conversations about things. But ultimately, you want someone that is there to support. And that's the reason they signed you in the first place, isn't it? Like,
they like you.
Yeah, I think we were fortunate that they got the kind of long-term vision of our project, which we were talking to a lot of different labels at the time where we signed there, and like the story could have quite easily been completely different. Like, a lot of the guys that, a lot of the artists that were like signing deals when we were signing deals, like, it was scary to see within a year to 18 months, most of them had might have been dropped or
really,
you know, parted ways. Like, it was crazy. Then everyone's like, "What? How are you still in the deal?" We don't really know, but it was basically like we just took our time and were fortunate with the team. And
was it a longer process finding the team, finding the right label, like what, having meetings with multiple people, or was it like meet FFRR and they're the one?
No, it was very much like it was spread out over. Like,
6 months.
Yeah, long time.
Were you specifically looking for a partner? Or was it
a bit of a mad time, wasn't it, really? It was one of those things where, like, one thing happened and it just snowballed. It was just a, I don't know, kind of things just really fell into place, and, like, we'd had a record that people were interested in, and then, you know, obviously, you know, industry talk and once they've heard that record they're interested, and then you get opportunities, you meet loads of people, and, like, you know, you get given more opportunities by, like, I don't know, in the way of, say, working with people, vocalists or whatever, and we ended up writing more demos with, you know, people and vocals that we'd been given by publishers or labels that were interested in working with us. And luckily we kept a flow with what we're writing, and it kind of G'd people up further. So we just ended up speaking to everyone in the end. And
nice position to be in.
Unreal. Yeah. Like, you know, so, and we at the time probably thought we were like pretty switched on and kind of knew what we were doing.
Mm. We've been working at music for like 10 years prior to that. Like, it's just sounds, you know, cliche to say you had that like break or whatever. It wasn't, I guess it was a break in some ways, but like it took 10 years.
Like, it's the beginning.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So yeah, we were, yeah, like you said, that we thought we were kind of like had all that history behind us and knew exactly where we wanted to go, what we wanted to do, but really it was kind of the start of a 5-6-7 year journey, which
it's pretty amazing. So having a deal for 5 years is pretty special. Yeah. You don't hear that often nowadays at all.
No, it's crazy. Yeah, we actually completed a contract.
Yeah. It was like having it was kind of the best situation, having like that backing and having the team that you're familiar with and you're comfortable with, and just having the freedom as well to like basically write what you want.
Also, the history of FFRR is pretty fucking amazing.
Having people like Pete Tong at the time, who was still involved, like having him there as well to like talk to about your music was, it's pretty mad.
Yeah. I think we're fortunate as well, like as talking about, you know, watching kind of people get dropped or whatever around us. Not just that, but we had the same label team till the end, till the end of our deal. And now they're all gone.
Yeah.
There's none of them there.
Yeah.
But we're in that major label world, like a lot of people move around every 2-3 years. So there's always that concern as well, like my A&R might not be here next year.
Yeah.
And then what if the one that comes in doesn't really like our music?
Yeah.
Is that, that situation happens a lot as well. So.
Which you forget about, because we think that everyone just stays in the same job because that's all we do for the whole of our lives is do the same thing.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's like you forget that a major label is a corporation. It's not anything else apart from a corporation, although they might fluff it up and make it sound like it's not, and people want to go earn more money somewhere else or do something different, which is understandable. But I can imagine if you sign a deal with an A&R and then they leave and somebody else comes in and they don't like you, then it's like, well, we're fucked.
I mean, and actually maybe we did have heads on us a little bit. We were actually pretty cheeky. I do remember in meetings, flat out asking, how long is your contract?
Yeah.
How long are you going to be in your job?
Yeah. That's not a bad thing, though.
It matters, you know?
Yeah.
And if they were like, well, I've got 5 years left. You'd be like, okay, cool.
We can work with this.
Yeah.
So leaving FFRR and then turning and then deciding to actually write an actual album.
Yeah.
What's that process?
Wasn't the initial, it was like, okay, we've been in this position for the last 5 years. We had our groove. We were like writing music consistently, putting out music consistently. And we kind of, it was ironically timed just before COVID hit that we put out Unfold. And obviously that came with its downsides.
Yeah.
But like we had always planned to like take a step back from just putting Icarus music out there.
Mm.
Like, right, we want to explore collaborating more, writing with other people,
seeing
other people's stuff.
What was the reasoning behind that? Were you just like over it or?
No, not over it. I think it was, we got to that point where it felt like a kind of bookend of a period or an era for us, and we just wanted a little bit of a change. Not like a permanent thing or anything like that, but just like a little break. With what happened with COVID and stuff, everybody else
had the break.
Was in the same boat as us. Like, nobody had any shows. Everyone's like, right, we need to do like production, writing, mix work, all that sort of stuff. So we kind of had, we were kind of in the same position as everyone else. So, but we did 12 months basically of that, basically writing, mixing, like random projects, other artists' projects. So it was good. It was like a good, healthy, like change in what we've been doing.
Did it revitalize or was it?
Yeah, definitely. I think that period away from it was like, it was weird initially to even start to think about writing original music again.
Yeah.
Almost daunting. Like, what are we even going to write?
Yeah.
Who even are we?
Yeah.
What do we like?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was a bit of that sort of like flapping around for probably a couple of weeks. And then we just got stuck in. And it was like, we got like right into flow pretty quickly, didn't we? And that was exciting because you know what it's like when you do write a lot for your own project. It's, and when you've been doing it for years, it can quite quickly become stagnant and you kind of lose inspiration.
It's also very easy just to do the same thing over and over again.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, I know I'm good at this. I know people like it. So let's just do it again and again and again. And then there comes a point where it's like, I can't write another fucking this record, or I can't write another that record. But it's actually really hard to get out of that.
That you have to like thing. Really push yourself to not fall into the same just routine of doing that. But definitely time away, like working on this, that, and everything, like just really helped that. Because like I said, we came back to it kind of no idea what we were going for. And just got a bunch of demos together really quickly, and it felt really good. So we just carried on, and I think the initial idea was to write an EP or a couple of singles, and kind of like it did happen with Unfold, we just kept going, and something started to come together.
It was, whereas this time when it came together, we made a conscious decision, like, okay, let's try and write an album, and we're seeing how that goes. But I think, like, we're quite deep in it, and actually we didn't want to, you know, plaster it online and say, okay, right, this is single one from the album that's coming, you know. So we're just like, we'll start putting the music out first, which we've done, like the music that we're doing currently, Last Night Felt Like the Future, Forever, Catch Your Breath, following the same like artwork theme, like we've done all that, we've done all the back end, like we know kind of what we're going for, we've got our theme, got our artwork, so we're just like, let's start and then see how it goes. Like I say, we've got the music, really, haven't we now?
Yeah, we're in the position now where it's like, we need to just go. We did the other week. We went through everything. We're like, right, we've got enough now. We've written so much. We can't go on like this forever. Like, let's select the best out of the stuff we like. And let's finish it.
And this is the thing about not being with a team as well, and you have to kind of learn it yourself. Is that because we are the label, you have to put that hat on. With yourselves, and be like, okay, guys, like,
where's the album?
Give yourself deadlines. Are really do you like working towards deadlines though?
Yes and no.
Yeah, like mostly no, but it's like it's essential, isn't it? Otherwise, we'll just carry on forever.
Yeah. I think there's also has to be an end to something, because I think then otherwise, as a human being, you don't ever achieve anything.
Yeah,
I think by
I don't know how you are, Will, with like finishing music and putting it out there, and if you listen to it afterwards. But I think as we've gotten older, we've got better at just being like, right, this is finished next week. Done. Like, move on, because there's always something else to move on to. Like, previously, we would just go round and round and round, and like you say, it doesn't get you anywhere. But it's very easy to do that, isn't it?
Super easy. I think for me, is like I was kind of the opposite to start with for a long time, where I'd just like be like, fuck it, just put it out. But then I'd realize like I need to spend a bit more time on my records, because otherwise they just sound shit. And then I went kind of the other way, where it would like, I'd be like, I can make this better and make this better and make this better and work on it. And then you get to a point where you're like, have I made it better or have I made it worse? Whereas like now I did it last week, actually. There's a record that I'm putting out that I know I could probably make better, but I'm also like, can I be bothered? And will me making it better actually make it better? Or is it just it's a vibe now, so let's just put the vibe out. As long as it sounds sonically good, like, it's a vibe. But it's a weird battle, isn't it? Because I'm sure you've got friends and I've got friends that they just never put any music out, and you're like, well, you work in the music business, you don't put music out. It's like, come on.
It's heartbreaking sometimes and frustrating, because you're like, so many people are sitting on gold. Depending on what you define gold as, but like, you just think it's not doing any good on your hard drive. Get it out there in the world. Let people have it. Let people enjoy it. And it's funny as well, like, using that word better and like making stuff better and what that means to you. And that changes as well, doesn't it? Like, over the years, especially as producers, which can become such a mathematical thing, and you get caught up in all of the stuff you've learned and all of the stuff that you know is like right and wrong and all of that, and you chip away at things sometimes. And we kind of know this now, and we catch ourselves overdoing it.
Yeah.
And we've also witnessed quite a few times, like, our own writing process is like, get the ideas down, V3 or whatever might be like really good.
Yeah.
We'll make it shit for about 10 versions and then start to bring it back again, like towards the end of the process.
Basically undo what we've spent.
Go back to V3.
Yeah. And literally just EQ the hi-hat.
Ah, shit, I could have done this 6 months ago.
Yeah, that's true. But you have to allow yourself to do that sometimes.
I agree.
I think sometimes that's kind of why our partnership works.
I was going to say, it's probably a lot easier to fall into that trap on your own. But having the two of us, we can call each other out.
And you're literally watching the other person like go down that road, and you can go, whoa,
stop.
Let's save some time here. Or you go, I know what he's doing, I'm going to let him do it for a couple of hours, and then he'll realize.
I guess it's the pros and cons of just being in a duo where you know each other super well as well. And like, there's no pressure for, you know, this isn't the only session. Like when you're in a collab and you're like sitting next to somebody and you're like, what the fuck are they doing? But you don't want to tell them that because you know, you're just going to redo it all again. But like, it's nice that time isn't necessarily a bad thing for you guys, where you're always working together. Do you always write together at the same time, or do you work differently?
No, like we were, for years and years, we were in a strict kind of, we just fell into this routine. Every idea would start together in the room. We'd just progress it like that. And we would kind of always work on one idea and just take it to the end. And I don't know when it switched where we would work on multiple things, but that happened. And then inevitably, like we've got laptops as well as the studio computer, so we're working outside of the studio, and we'll both start ideas now and bring them in and develop them together. And I think that's a kind of much more, we're a lot more prolific that way, and it's just much more economical with time, because if an idea is not progressing, we'll sack it off and move on. But like learning the hard way again with that stuff, just like for ages, we'd just labor at a track, even if it didn't end up any good.
Yeah.
We'd always finish everything.
Which I think is a good tool to do. It's a good tool to like learn at the beginning as to actually how to finish a record, even if it's shit.
That's definitely beneficial. Like there's no point in having 500 ideas which never get finished.
Yeah.
So I think, getting the balance of like not pushing something if it's not going anywhere, but actually finishing stuff.
Totally.
Yeah. There's limits, isn't there? Because sometimes we've been in that situation where, and this is why I kind of, like I was saying, like we witness each other doing these different things and we can say, oh, it's okay, we'll get to that point. But like, we have labored at things.
Yeah.
For hours sometimes. And it's taken those hours to get that moment.
Yeah.
Where you go, oh, like, thank goodness we actually stuck at it.
Yeah.
That bit's the thing now. So you kind of never know. There's so many paths.
It's the best feeling that. Though when you're putting the hours in and then something clicks, you press the wrong button that you weren't supposed to press, and you're like,
that's usually it.
That's it. But you've got to have done those 5 hours prior to that minute where that thing happened which you didn't mean to happen.
Happy accidents that actually like made you make the happy accident yourself. I love that. That's the best feeling. So because you're releasing it yourself with the new album, and you're not really announcing it as like, we are doing the single for the new album, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. How are we, And you haven't finished yet. Have you finished it yet?
No, we're not finished.
I like this as a concept though, because you're releasing singles for the album and the album's not even finished.
Yeah, it's an experiment, Will. I can't lie. No, we're kind of like, there's just, you know, talking about paths. Like, it's the same with the business aspect. It's the same with the releasing schedule. Like, there are set ways and there are things that obviously work. And like, we, you know, we watch other people and their campaigns, and we have looked at other campaigns and thought, okay, what's the, you know, what do you leave between singles, and when do you announce this, and when do you do that, and when this, and that's all like well and good, and you know, this is not a how long is a piece of string sort of thing. Like, we have got a campaign timeline in our minds. It's just not, we've written the album, we've got singles 1, 2, and 3, and then the album drops, and that's it.
The traditional way.
Yeah, which works, but we just kind of, I think maybe it's because we'd had that little bit of time away as well. We were too eager to start putting music out to wait any longer. So we just thought, let's start and just get the things moving. And now, you know, in this conversation, it's out there now. You know, it's out there. The universe has heard. So
I think we had at least half an album's worth of stuff we were confident in before we put the first record out.
Yeah.
We weren't like, we didn't write a single and go stick it out and then, you know, the rest would come. We had a concept, we had a sound. We were halfway there. It's just, we didn't want to like spend the next 6 months finishing it before we put anything in.
It's out this year.
At some point when you want it to be out. How many records? Is it going to be 10?
Yeah, at least 10. This is the thing. Like, if we didn't have the dates in the diary, then the track list could just go on and on, because we're still writing every week. It's going to be between 10 and...
Well, I mean, we put 14 on the list yesterday, and we're like, we didn't even realise we've got this now. Yeah. So there's a couple of ones to cut, and then you crack on.
But I think that's a good position to be in, because, and it's not like immediately for us, we were like, oh, that one's got to go.
I don't know what we're cutting.
Yeah. We've never been in this position before. No. So
that's great though, because also the way I look at it is that the ones you cut, even if they're good enough, they're the next album.
Exactly. They just don't live on this one. Like, it's not wasted time or art, you know, it's just about this project.
Yeah.
And I think just... the other thing about campaigns as well is, and we talk about this quite a lot, like for us, once you know someone's doing an album, the exciting bit really is up to the point where it comes out.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you do the traditional 3 single and focus track on launch, that's 4 records out of 10 plus that get
love,
the spotlight.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas if you do, you know, that's why we're kind of like, put a single out, put a single out. And like, we're obviously not going to put 10 singles out and then group them together, but we get the opportunity to give.
But you could.
You could. Exactly. There's so many different ways to do it.
Yeah. It's like, it's almost like a greatest hits album, right? Of how like all of the old pop, the old pop stars used to do. Cause it's like, you know what? Yeah. Like the way they used to work albums back then, it was like that. It was a traditional 2-3 singles and then you get an album. And then they just made an album of all those 2-3 singles that were fucking great. But I think the way Spotify, or not just Spotify, but streaming works generally now, is that it is a single culture, sadly. And I think you could put 8 singles out and a few interludes and you're absolutely laughing, and then you got an album. Which could be a really interesting way to do it.
Yeah. It's just and I think as artists, that's the worry, is basically you put all this time in to this project and it's only 3 or 4 records that get
the light,
the real time. Because the way people consume music now is, like you say, it's single culture, and it's so rare that people sit there and listen to an entire album.
Yeah.
And it doesn't, and maybe that's, you know, us getting too caught up on numbers and stuff now as well. 100%. Because once it's out there forever. Like, yeah, people are going to listen to it. But yeah, that's just kind of the place we're in, isn't it?
I guess my question is then, why are you doing an album?
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I think we just love albums. Yeah. So we love the whole ethos behind an album.
Yeah.
Like, we are at our best creatively when we are working on something bigger than a single.
Yeah.
Or bigger than an EP. Like, we want to put out a lot of albums. We've always wanted to be an album artist. Mm. And, like, yes, the landscape of the industry has changed massively, and albums are probably less relevant than they were a lot, you know, when we signed our record deal or whatever.
But yeah,
like, our love for them hasn't changed, and we'll probably always put albums out.
Mm.
I think we've just, yeah, it just inspires us a lot more to think about music in that way.
Yeah. It gives you a lot more,
it gives you more freedom.
It gives you more freedom, yeah. More scope to, like, mess around with different musical ideas, because you're not just thinking about, will it connect as a single? Yeah. Does it work on radio? Like, or, you know, where does this sit in the, like, you don't have to worry about that. You can go, like you say, I can write an interlude and love it, and it wouldn't otherwise, it wouldn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
So get it on a project that makes sense where it sits, and you get to, yeah, put it out there in the world, which is what it's about, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
I agree. I think albums are just special pieces of art generally. I think just how, like, we grew up in the album era. So obviously we're biased to that. But I just had a conversation with Joyce Muniz, and she's about to drop an album as well. And she said exactly the same. It's just a place where you can just be, you can put all of your musical identities together rather than worry about, oh, this person's changed their sound, or this person's done that, and et cetera, et cetera, and where everyone judges you, whereas, like, okay, no, it's an album, they're allowed to do what the fuck they want to a certain extent, which is interesting.
I think it does, it allows you that, doesn't it? People expect that from an album. You want to be taken on a bit of a journey,
It's also like it's a snapshot of where you're at as an artist as well. I think it'll be nice just as artists to look back as well, you know, in 20 years and listen and go, oh, that's what we were doing at that point. And then you went there and then, you know.
And oh, that was shit.
It's like figuring out the art behind it and everything. And like, we love that side of it.
Yeah.
Like, what's this going to look like? How is that going to form a theme? How's that going to run through the whole thing for like a year?
Yeah.
It's just getting your teeth into that side of thing. And because, like, we're doing it all independently, we're having to, like, it's everything we're involved with.
Yeah.
So yeah, like, it's, that's a really rewarding process.
Was that a choice? Was that a choice to go independent, or was it kind of like, okay, we've run our way at a major, and now we don't want to go for another major, or we just want to try this ourselves?
It was a conscious decision. Yeah. I mean, we're still,
very happy to work with labels and will continue to do so. But I think because we had been in a deal, even though it was a good one, like you just, I don't know, we got to this point where we just thought there's something in us that just wants to do it ourselves. Yeah, like we just want to try it. We've been running our own label for like 7 years anyway. And we just thought, you know, let's
give it a go.
Give it a go. Yeah. Like we've got a bit of a following. Like we kind of know we know what we're doing.
Yeah.
Like let's just try it. Mm. Like it's just like I say, this is just where we're at right now in our artist career.
Yeah.
We'll definitely work with labels like
in future. Yeah.
Yeah. And definitely. We still are even now. Like it's just this project felt right to go on our own.
Totally.
Yeah. Our own imprint.
When you've got your 14 records, like you wrote down yesterday, how do you even begin to put them together as an album, if that makes sense? It's like sonically.
Yeah. Sonically. I think we kind of set loose parameters. We do and we don't. Like we've got a clear vision at the start.
Mm.
And although we're very like free in what we're writing when we're writing it, it does all kind of come together.
Yeah.
And there has been like a number of demos that went over the past year when we've been writing, it's like, okay, that doesn't really fit. We did that at that point. That was cool. We got that out of our system and then, but it doesn't make sense. Like it's not part of this kind of story.
Mm-hmm.
So like listening to that's part of the process of, when we sat down and we went through, it was like, does this feel like it's making sense? And it's not like the first time we've done it. Like we have been listening through as we're going.
Yeah.
But now it's like, yeah, what does this is, does it have its place?
Yeah.
As a whole. And like, do we, yeah. Is it strong enough? Do we love it enough?
Mm.
And then it just kind of comes together. It's really, the writing is basically done. It's just,
yeah.
To finishing now.
Yeah. And we do like, because we've started this one, I can't really remember what it was like with Unfold, like bringing it all together at the end, but it was probably like harder than what this will be because we knew from the outset, this is the one project. And we've obviously conscious, like we put Last Night for Art the Future out. We're referencing that when we're finishing Forever.
Yeah.
Same again with Catch Your Breath. Like, we can do that across the whole album.
And even though there are tracks which are, you know, they're pushing the boundaries of do they sit together.
Yeah,
we're very conscious, like, even though that's over there and that's there, like they've gotta have something which kind of ties them together.
Through line of sound.
Like, yeah, exactly. Mm. Like it can't just be totally random.
Yeah. Or could it be?
Well, it could be.
Stick an interlude in the middle. Yeah.
It could be, but I mean, for us, like, we are quite OCD people.
Yeah.
We like things to have some sort of continuity and, yeah, whether that comes through in our music or not, I don't know.
It does. You've always done that really well as an artist. Like, I've followed you for years and it's always been, this is an Icarus record. And I was just listening to the new stuff now, which I've definitely listened to previously to this conversation, but listening to it as like, is it four tracks or three tracks out?
Three.
Yeah. Like three. It's not the Icarus I know.
Yeah.
But it's a through line. And that's kind of what I wanted to talk about is like, what's with the change up? Because it is a complete change up and I like it. I respect it a lot. But it's definitely away from what you were doing.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Bless you.
Thanks. what was that kind of decision?
I think kind of like we were saying, like we were in a position where we found our flow, like we found kind of like our sound.
Yeah.
Although we've always been like we've brought a whole load of different influences and stuff into what our Icarus sound is.
Mm.
It was that time away and then coming back to it and being like, what are we feeling at the moment? Like, what are we inspired by?
Yeah.
Not trying to preconceive, like, oh no, it's got to sound like, it's got to sound like what we were doing before.
Yeah.
People need to put it on and be like, oh, I know, that's an Icarus record.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of intentionally wanted to push that boundary, but, and it's probably like to our detriment, but we always want to do that. So how far can we push this? But still, like, our existing fans be like, okay, I kind of get what they're doing.
Mm.
I think these three records in particular are probably some of the furthest away from our older sound.
Yeah.
We've definitely got records that will be on the album which will feel more familiar existing fans. But just where we're at now, like what we're feeling at the moment is just a bit more, a bit heavier, a bit clubbier.
I was going to say, it feels more club oriented.
Like it says, it's just trying to push our sound. But we found that when we started to do it, you got to be conscious as well. How do we inject the kind of Icarus feel to this?
Yeah.
And I guess that's why hopefully we end up with this weird, like weird different version of club Icarus. Music, whatever it is.
No, I dig it. I dig it a lot. And I think there does come a point in, I did it with my sound years ago. Well, 2018, 2019, like the switch from Dirty Bird to whatever I'm doing now, whatever it is. Like, I think it's really important. I think it keeps things fresh and it allows you to explore different things, but it also opens you up to different people to listen to your music.
Yeah.
Which
we were talking about this only this morning. Yeah. Like putting yourself in new arenas.
Yeah.
And different people supporting your music as well.
Yeah. Yeah,
like different people in the scene playing it out in different parties and stuff. That's exciting, isn't it? Like that's cool to know that this DJ has never played our records before.
Totally,
playing this one. That's exciting.
Well, I think it's also like, let's be honest, we're still in the music business, and we still need to be known by people. And I think if you just stay in a bubble of yourself, unless you're the biggest in that bubble, right? Which is fucking hard. You never know if that's ever going to happen. Yeah. Like we're all one record away from being that. But like if you broaden what you do to new sounds and new parts of the industry, you're just giving yourself more options for at that one record, right? You're giving yourself more opportunities to have the hit record.
Yeah, exactly. And I think there's just, we've always had that, just we just get bored doing the same thing over and over again.
Yeah.
Like, although there is a natural sound to what we do, like we do kind of gravitate towards certain types of sounds and things like that.
Yeah.
Like you did with your sound, like just being like, no, I want to push for something just a bit outside of the comfort zone.
Yeah.
See what happens. And like the test for us now, like it's so easy to lose perspective on like, what the fuck am I writing? Like, what even is this? But if we're both like in the studio, just like, this is wicked. That's good enough. Like, not really ask for much more when you've been doing it for this long. It's like,
No, totally. And I think you can't think, when you're writing something, you can't think about the audience.
No.
Because it's you're then just being like, well, for me, I can't talk for you guys, but like if I'm like, I need to write the biggest record possible, it's like, well, you're automatically just setting yourself up to fail.
Yeah.
And you know you're going to come out with the most obscure record when you go into the studio thinking you're going to write the biggest record in the world. Like the biggest records in the world come so unnaturally, if you know what I mean, where you're just like, you just go in the studio one day and it happens. And I think, do you guys put, or have you, or do you, over the years, put pressure on yourselves about trying to write a big record?
I think we have done.
We definitely have
done. Yeah. But I think we have done. But
at the beginning, especially in that major label.
Yeah.
Period, at the beginning. Because there's pressure as well. Not even necessarily like from the label, but like from yourself.
Totally.
get into a position, you're like, wow, okay, we've signed on the dotted line. Now we've got to deliver.
Yeah.
Like, here comes pressure.
Yeah.
And so we definitely felt it there. But it ebbed away as we became more confident and comfortable. And, you know, it's we're all going to be, well, you think you're going to be doing this for the rest of your life. So it's like, it's going to happen. You just got to kind of relax into your flow and just kind of trust where it goes. And
I think it's the process of having put out music for so many years and seeing just like, you know, when you're so excited about something coming out, you're like, this is the one.
Yeah.
This is the one. And then it flops. And you're like,
It's not the one.
But then like the random tune, which you loved, but you didn't have any expectation for. It's just like,
it's the one.
You know, that's the one. And then you're like, well, I know nothing.
Yeah.
I'm just going to, you just put it into perspective, like,
how little you know.
How little we really know.
It's the most stupid industry for that, right? Like any other industry, like any other corporation, and we'll be like, we know this is going to work, so we're going to do it. And let's do it. And then we can do it a million times and we can make a fuck ton of money out of it and we'll all be successful. In the music industry, it's like zero idea.
There's no rhyme or reason to why records blow sometimes. It's the right thing at the right time and you cannot guess that.
Luck.
Yeah. It's such a huge part of it, which makes it really exciting. But if you're too...
Or really depressing.
Exactly. It can make things so disappointing at times. And if you're like new to this, it can be crushing.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it's the reason why a lot of people give up.
But, like early on. I think it's also that thing, isn't it? Is when you've had a certain level of success and then you don't get that certain level of success. I guess success, I'm talking about numbers and streams, right?
Yeah.
You have a record that does a fuck ton of streams and then your next record does a quarter of it. And you're like, why? Like, don't get it. Yeah. It makes no sense.
Yeah.
But then it's also like it might happen in a year's time where that record that you think you thought the record was going to do really well, didn't do very well, and then all of a sudden it gets picked up and it absolutely goes fucking massive. And you're like, what the fuck's going on?
That definitely, the realization of that comes with, experience as well, doesn't it? Like, we're very aware, had so much expectation right at the start, put it out, and then it just, it doesn't blow straight away, and it's easy to get disheartened. But, the way things are these days, just the amount of music that gets released, it's so easy for stuff. Mm. Even if one of your favourite artists puts a record out, you might not even know about that for a couple of months. Even if you think like you're on top of that stuff. It's so easy to miss stuff these days.
It's so weird how that happens.
Mm. It can take 12 months before anything happens. Yeah. So that like we remind ourselves of that quite often. Like, that has happened with some of our records.
It's frustrating as hell when you're trying to run a business as well as be artists, because we rely on records to do well to then get booked at the end of the day. But do you guys have management and stuff as well, or is it just you two?
Not currently, we're totally independent.
Sick.
So this was another part of our like this period where we kind of switched things up. So
did you leave management? How did that work? How did that go down?
Yeah, we did. Yeah. We were together for quite a long time. But it was like, kind of like with all of this, it was just like a gut thing.
Yeah.
No like bad feeling at all. You know, nothing went wrong.
Yeah.
It was
just kind of ran its course.
Yeah.
We reached a point where we were like, okay, this kind of feels like a new chapter for us. And just had to make, a difficult decision.
Yeah.
But it felt like we had to do it.
Yeah.
But it's weird, we're like, with the same management for several years, and you know what it's like, your relationship with the manager is very personal, and
of course
you speak to them every day, and it's weird to have that stop overnight.
Yeah, it's just like having a boyfriend or a girlfriend, right? It's exactly the same. It's just the relationship. Something happens, the relationship stops, and then you stop checking in with them every day, and you're like, fuck.
Yeah, it's weird.
How was that? How was that process, though, like coming out of that?
Probably a bit strange at first, wasn't it? Yeah. Like any relationship, yeah. It takes a period of that getting, because it's habitual, isn't it?
Like yeah.
You're in so many habits with that person, with that, that team. And then, you get to a point where you're like, okay, like, right, what do we do now? Like, where do we go? What's the aim? And then, but it's this whole game, like, it's exciting. Like, change is exciting.
Mm.
It can push you in new directions. It can fire you up. Like, not scared of changing things. But it was just like a learning experience, like so much in this industry. But it was cool. Like, I'm glad it wasn't a bad breakup, like so many people have. Like, at least there's no lawsuits or anything. Like,
it was just
not fun. A good one.
They're never fun. I guess it's I think it's really interesting to me because I'm like, I do a lot of things myself, but I still have like my management around me. So it could be like, it could be pretty freeing, not saying I'm going to fire my manager, Ryan. Ryan, you're good. but like, it could be really interesting to just be like super free and just be like,
it is. Do you know what it is? Like, obviously there's pros and cons, like having to deal with everything.
Yeah.
Quickly becomes frustrating.
Yeah, it's not that freeing.
time consuming. Could really do with a manager.
I haven't responded to that email. I wish we had someone. There's obviously pros and cons. Like, that we're not going to stay independent forever. Like, you gotta have people around you. Like, just having people that get it and have people that are just doing stuff for you when you're not in the same room. Like, it can only be beneficial, unless they're, really rubbish at their job or like not representing you properly. But if they are and you trust them, like, obviously that's a good thing. Like, having people have your back and promoting you, talking about you, opening doors, all of that stuff.
Totally.
So we're not just like, we don't need it. It's not that. It's just where we were at and how we're doing it right now.
Mm. Yeah, I totally get that. Could you just get an assistant to do all the admin?
I mean, that's another thing. We kind of see some people do that and think.
Yeah, I mean, we do have help with that stuff, but like, that obviously that's not management.
No. Yeah.
In terms of like the day-to-day stuff like that, which I think also because we're both control freaks.
Yeah.
We do find it hard to let things go. And it's okay. It was all right with our previous management because there was a level of trust there. But because we are technically involved with everything now, although we've got some assistance, it's like we still have to basically
do it.
Yeah, you still do the It's like you can have someone kind of doing invoicing or sending out agreements and stuff, but management's the whole
different thing. It's also having somebody that you can just like get honest feedback from, where they have like your best interest in at the end of the day. There's no like ego in that. There shouldn't be from a manager. It's like their best interest is yours, and you can listen to them or you can take whatever they say like a grain, like with a pinch of salt. It doesn't really matter, but I think having a third party that has nothing else, there's no other hidden motives in that relationship.
Just having that different, slightly different point of view, but with the best intentions behind it, like, it's just really helpful. Like, often things that we wouldn't think about from from exactly the same point of view between us, like a third person, and terms of management would be really helpful.
Yeah. Well, we're fortunate that, like, at least we've got, we're a duo. Like,
yeah, definitely.
If you're not on your own, 100%, like, a manager is pretty yeah. key, I'd say, that you trust.
What do you look for in a manager, though? Like, now you've gone through the management, like, now, and you're in the process of, like, not necessarily looking for a manager, but, like, this is what I want for a manager. Because I think it's really important for people to kind of understand that, and it changes for everybody, right? But, like, what does Icarus need in a manager, I guess?
I think that changes, and what we need or look for will be different from other people.
Totally.
I think you've got to kind of accept, and this is just like people in general, you're not going to find a manager that ticks every single box.
Yeah.
Like over the years, you can kind of go, that manager's that sort of manager and that one's that sort. And they're really good at that. They're really good at that. And they're really good at that.
Yeah.
I've never met anyone that could do absolutely everything. No. Do you know what I mean? So you can get people who are like fantastic at meetings, and they're like amazing with people, but they're not great with like admin.
Yeah.
Or like they can't do like numbers and stuff. They're mm-hmm. like, that doesn't go together. But or you get people that are total opposite.
Yeah.
Or you get people that would be like fantastic at A&R but can't do, you know, meetings or whatever. Like, you just need to understand what probably like plug the holes that you're missing.
Yeah.
But as to what we need, I guess it's just someone that can add value, isn't it?
Like, yeah.
Someone that does shit that you can't or don't have time for and that you trust doing.
I think that that's a big thing, isn't it? Like, you've got to trust the person to be representing you the way you want to be represented.
Mm.
And to value their opinion. Because if you don't value their opinion, it's like, it's never going to work.
Totally.
So you need to be pulling in like the same direction.
Yeah.
And you need to be able to feel like you can rely on them.
Yeah.
When you need to.
I think it's also handy to have somebody that's not the artist and that can go and shout at the top of the hill as loud as they possibly can about you, because it just, there's something feels weird when labels, agents, promoters treat artists differently to managers, and they won't be as honest to the artist as they will to the agent, to everybody else around them.
Yeah,
and I think you need that level of honesty sometimes.
Definitely.
Which,
I mean, go back to when we were talking to labels and stuff. We didn't have management at the start of that, and it got to the point with publishers and labels where they were like, yeah, we can't really take conversations further until you get married.
Yeah,
they just wouldn't do it.
Yeah,
they just would not talk to us.
Mm.
So we're like, okay, this is weird, but
yeah,
I guess we've got to go and find a manager. But it's true, like that.
Yeah,
the relationship is just you need that go between sometimes.
Yeah,
to make the whole thing work.
I think it's also a level of professionalism, right? Unless you have that hit record, like, let's say, for instance, Camel Fat didn't have managers for years, right?
Yeah.
And they did their time, and they were Camel Fat for years, and then Cola came out. They didn't need managers, right? After Cola, like, everything, they just need an assistant. Everything comes to them, and it's on a plate. But I think there also does come a point when you do have to take managers on to elevate everything and to get you where you need to get to, so you can just concentrate on being the creative.
Definitely.
Which is really important.
Yeah. I mean, when you reach that level, obviously there's so many plates spinning, and if you're trying to handle all of that yourself, then it's just going to, there's no chance of it all working.
Yeah. Because you won't be focusing on the important part, which is
the music,
the art.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you've got to be able to do that.
Well, I think it's also that realization of what got you there, and it was the music that got you there. So it's not going to be anything else that gets you further apart from great music.
Yeah.
Unless you're like an Instagram influencer and and you can make stupid videos. But so when's the, you don't know when the album's fully out, do you? I'm not even going to ask you that.
We have just... got dates in the diary.
Oh, yeah?
I don't want to give you the specific date, just basic moves.
Well, this episode is coming out on the 11th of April.
Okay, the album won't be
out there. But it'll be a step closer.
But you'll have had a couple more pieces of music.
Yeah. How often are you releasing?
Our next record is the 9th of March. Mm-hmm. Then we've got something on the 2nd of April. But
9th of March, that's a Thursday.
Yeah.
Interesting. I want to know your theory behind this.
See, that's not art. So that is with another label. So
wow. Okay.
But the record will be on the album.
The record is going around.
So this is another, like, it's a different, slightly different way of releasing stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, that is with different label.
What label is that with?
That's with Andrew Medine.
Okay.
And then
I think we can say that. We haven't.
Well, we can
it'll be out by the time.
Yeah, so we're doing a record with Anjuna Deep that is going out as a single, but will still be on our album.
Okay, how does that work in a deal-wise?
You have to basically, the conversation was transparent straight away because we got a good relationship with those guys and we want to continue to work with them, but also have our own campaign.
Yeah.
So we're just kind of trying to finding ways of like making two things work.
Yeah.
So we just had the upfront conversation, and then it's basically like a licensing thing.
Yeah.
So it's basically like it would be between any two labels, really. Yeah. One licenses off the other.
Did you have to pay for your own record?
Well, we haven't, so I'm hoping that's not.
That would be hilarious if it was.
Yeah. They'd clear us out.
$10,000 licensing fee. Thanks, guys. Yeah, but then I guess you'd get half of it.
Yeah, we claim it back.
Yeah.
Pay ourselves.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, this is it. Like, this is kind of a nice, just a nice way of like being able to experiment with stuff like this on our own right now.
Yeah.
Is, I mean, who knows? Next year we might just be going, we'll never do that again.
Yeah.
But right now, it feels like it's cool to be pushing things in different directions and seeing how it pans out. And we'll still come out at the end of it with an album.
Yeah, I think independence is the way forward, generally. Yeah. You own everything, then, which for me is just, like, key. You have all these...
I mean, I think it depends what you want, I guess, doesn't it? And where you are as well.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's everything's leaning far more towards independence, isn't it, nowadays?
Yeah, I think it's just the value of music is just, although there's so much of it, the value of music, if you're making quality music, it's so valuable to own everything.
Yeah.
Whereas on majors, a lot of the deals, you don't own anything for a long time.
Yeah.
Which has its pros and cons, right? I understand
it's a trade-off.
Like you're getting paid for your music by a label. You're getting a lot of marketing. You're getting a lot of stuff put into it, which you wouldn't necessarily be able to do as an artist starting out. So I think, you have to do those deals to a certain extent if that's what you want.
Yeah.
But it still comes out to me that, like, after a publishing deal or after a label deal or something like that, it's like, yeah, but I wish I just owned my music.
Mm. But it's hard. It's hard to know, isn't it? Because there's no kind of like two versions like what would have happened and what did happen. It's like, would you feel like that if you'd done it all yourself and you got to that point in time? You might go, oh, it would have been so much better to have some help.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, 10 years down the lane. 10 years down the line, if you haven't been successful, you're like, well, maybe I should have.
Yeah.
Try it. Try everything.
But this is why I think we're much more like in a time now where if you have been about for a bit, then it can definitely pay to be independent or to own your stuff.
Yeah.
Like if you've already got a bit of a name, a bit of a following.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we're in that era.
And it's also having the confidence to be like, actually, we know how this stuff works.
Yeah.
Like, this is going to be a massive learning curve, but like we know enough to give it a go.
Yeah.
Like it is a lot to take on. Like if we were just starting out, there's no way I would want to do it, or I would suggest somebody who does everything independently because you kind of need to know how each moving part does operate. But yeah, once you've been in it for a little while, then it's definitely worth giving it a go.
Also financially as well, like when you're independent, because the percentages are so higher successfully on stream-wise, the records don't have to do as much for you to earn as much money generally if you're looking on a finance side for records to do well. And if they do pop off, you can actually earn a pretty solid living from your music, which is great.
I think that's, a realisation again after, like, you're releasing a record on a major label with a pretty terrible split, then you see it start to do decent numbers and you're like, oh.
Yeah. And you sit there with your calculator and you go, oh. I wish we owned that.
Yeah. But again, it's the hindsight thing. Like,
That
it's not to say the record would be doing that if it hadn't come out of that. I mean, there's so many variables, you can't really think too much about.
And it's like the label has to, dance labels are strange to me because, especially majors, because a lot of them are owned by big, like FFRR is owned by Warner, right? So it's like Beyonce puts out one record and it pays for everyone's wage for the fucking year. So it's like, that's the thing that kind of is weird to me, that with electronic labels in majors, they're still giving really shit deals, because, which is weird when the dance records don't really make money in the grand scheme of things of a major label. But also you have to pay for everyone. Everyone's wages has to come out of that, and which makes sense why the splits are so shit.
There was like a running joke at Parlophone that Coldplay basically paid for us and everyone.
Cheers.
Thank Coldplay.
Which is mad to think, isn't it? In this, like, a lot of dance records can do extremely well and have done extremely well. You've had extremely successful records as well, and it's mad to think that one Coldplay record literally destroys her whole career. And then it's like,
perspective, doesn't it?
Yeah, and then you're like, maybe I should just start writing Christmas songs.
Oh, we have that conversation every year.
I was reading like Slade. What's the dude that sings that Slade song?
Yeah.
And he makes like 500 grand a year. Just off that.
Nuts,
and you're like, oh, fucking, not that we do it for the money, eh? But
doesn't look like it.
Yeah, I know. But like, imagine that. Jesus Christ.
I know. Nice little Christmas present.
Nice little bonus, isn't it? Every year. Damn. Well, lads, we've been doing nearly an hour and a half. So let's wrap this up. Thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having us.
I appreciate it. We should definitely catch up when we're all in the same city at some point.
Should
go for some food or something, or write some music. How can people follow you? How can people listen to your music? And how can people follow the album campaign and all of that?
Yeah, well, all the usuals. We're at This Is Icarus on everything, except Twitter, which is just at Icarus. Music's on all the usual socials, all the usual DSPs. And now it's out there in the world that we're writing an album. We will be announcing more with our proper timeline.
2025.
Sick. Yeah, so all the information is coming. It's in our diary, so we'll start to share it with the world now.
Nice one, lads. Thanks so much for coming on. Keep safe and see you soon.
Thank you very much. Mate.
Peace, guys. See you in a bit.
Cheers.
And that is a wrap. Big love to the lads coming on. Hope you enjoyed it. Keep safe. Please share. Send it to your mates. Send it to your family. Give us some love. Keep safe. See you next time.
Every day, we rise, challenging ourselves to work for what we believe in. At U.S. Border Patrol, protecting our borders is more than a job. It's a calling. Agents answer the call.
working together to keep our country and communities safe. If you're ready for a new mission, join U.S. Border Patrol and go beyond. Learn more at cbp.gov/careers.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.